fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty hi-yo, Silver, the Lone Ranger.
86 years ago this week, January 1933, the iconic radio western The Lone Ranger premiered from the Detroit studios of radio station WXYZ. It was an instant hit, and soon it was picked up by the Mutual Radio Network. So by 1939, some 20 million Americans turned on their radios three times a week to hear the adventures of the Lone Ranger and his loyal Indian scout, Tonto. Rachel Clark of the Michigan History Center is here with us. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
And we have a special guest who spent years teaching drama and running the theater program at Marion and Brother Rice High Schools in Oakland County. Lou Smella was a child actor on The Lone Ranger. Lou Smella, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, Cindy. I'm happy to be here.
Rachel, for our younger listeners who may not have heard The Lone Ranger on radio or read the comic books or watched the TV show that ran from 1949 to 1957 or seen the movies, briefly, who was The Lone Ranger?
He has an interesting backstory. The Lone Ranger's name is John Reed, and he is the lone survivor of a group of Texas Rangers who were killed in an ambush. He's nursed back to health by Tonto, a young Potawatomi. And once he's healthy, he learns that all the Rangers are dead, including his brother. So he dons a mask and vows to fight injustice.
And who created the Lone Ranger?
The Lone Ranger was the creation of George Trendle and writer Fran Stryker. George Trendle wanted to have a popular, family-friendly show and came up with the concept of this mysterious masked hero. Fran Stryker was a scriptwriter who created the character details and the storylines.
And George Trendle was the WXYZ station owner?
He was.
My understanding was, I've always kind of heard, there were some very strict guidelines for the writers as to who the Lone Ranger was and what he would or would never do.
There's a very long list of things for the Lone Ranger. Things like, he's never going to be seen without his mask. And he can't be captured for too long because that's no fun. And if he is captured, he has to use his wits and his smarts to get him out of it. He can never swear. He can't drink. He has perfect grammar with no slang. And the bad guys always have to be Americans. That was to not create animosity amongst anybody else. And they were to not, quote unquote, be put in enviable positions of wealth and power. So they had to be just sort of everyday people who were the bad guys.
Interesting. And so the actors pretty much all came from the Detroit area?
They did. There were three main actors that played the part of the Lone Ranger. George Seton was the first for a few months in 1933. And then Earl Grazer is 1933 until his tragic death in 1941 in a car accident. And then probably the best known Lone Ranger is Brace Beamer. He's from 1941 to 1954. And he's the person that actually went out into public so people could see the Lone Ranger. He was a very tall man, a very big man. He could ride a horse. So he was actually also the public face of the Lone Ranger.
Well, with that, let's turn to Lou Smella. Lou, tell us about being on the program. When was this and how old were you?
Well, I think I was 10. I might have been 9. My brother and I went to audition. I had done radio for a long time as a young kid, so a studio wasn't anything intimidating to me. And I went to audition, apparently for Mr. Stryker, and he was delighted because he said, gee, kids who can read and act. Because at that point on the radio, if you needed a kid, you got an adult who sounded like a kid. They didn't use kids. And so we were honored to be selected to be the kids that were on the scripted stories of the Lone Ranger, which was very, very slim and very, very rare. We didn't do a lot of work, but when we did, we were either together, brother and sister, whose parents had been killed in some situation or taken away, and the Lone Ranger would find us in a desolate village where no one was alive but us, you know, that sort of thing. We weren't a specific character or characters. We were whatever the script called for the children involved in those situations at the time.
Ah.
When they needed us, they called us, which wasn't really often, but we did get to go several times.
So I'm interested in what you remember most about being on the show. And I guess to that, I've got to wonder, did the actors look like the characters that you imagined through the radio?
Some of them did. Most of them did not. The Lone Ranger did. Oh, gee. Except for the mask, he was perfect. Everything was there. He was a tall, very large man, wore the wonderfully designed cowboy boots, the Levi's and the jacket, the plaid shirt, and he was just so into being the Lone Ranger. Oh, he also had this wonderful hat, and he wore it all the time.
So Brace Beamer embraced this completely.
Oh, he did. He was absolutely the Lone Ranger.
All right. What about Tonto?
Tonto, on the contrary, was in my eyes, a 10-year-old's eyes. He was probably 80 years old at the time. Maybe he wasn't that old. But he was bald on the top and had a ring of silver-white hair around, in the back of your head from ear to ear. And he wore a white dress shirt rolled up with the sleeves and a regular pair of trousers. And he just was, kemosabe. And I just remember him saying that over and over. When they did the show, they had scripts in their hands, of course. And they had eye contact. The two of them, I remember the eye contact between the Lone Ranger and Tonto. And they acted the roles, even though they didn't move around. What I, again, remember, which I took with me, Cindy, as a teacher later years in life.
Yeah.
I remember them being those characters in the studio where it was just microphones and walls. And yet they were definitely the Lone Ranger and Tonto. And they communicated beautifully with each other. Now, the other actors, I don't remember a lot of women. I just remember men being in there. I'm sure every now and then there were women in the roles. But for the most part, they were people just dressed in regular clothes who, again, though, took on the persona of whatever cowboy or sheriff character they were to be that day, or a person in the town. They just really acted without moving all around, no blocking, no specific kinds of actions, just their inside body movement became external through their voices, and it was just wonderful.
Now, the Lone Ranger was very audio-rich program. Did you get any interaction with the sound effects crew?
Oh, did we ever, and of course, being a kid, the sound effects were the big thing at that point, because again, before television, we didn't have television. So the sound effects people were in the corner. I remember there was a little half wall between them. But there were these two people, as I recall, who were there, and they had the coconuts for the house, the horse beats, and the squeaky door that would open and close if you needed to close the barn door or whatever door, the floor wood panel that if you needed to walk on steps, or then the sand if you walked on the sand or in the dirt, all different kinds of sound things. And of course, that fascinated me completely. I was just enraptured by what was going on in the sound corner because I didn't have a whole lot to do in the script part. I did my part. I said my four or five lines and then I was done.
And you could watch the sound people.
Oh, and I watched the sound people and I was just, we just loved it. I remember that very much too, but very specifically, for a kid that age to remember what I remember is really strange, but I knew it was something important.
Let's take a listen to a bit of an episode from 1942 with Brace Beamer as the Lone Ranger and talking with Tonto.
The masked man hurried to the saddle shed where Tonto was waiting with Silver and Scout.
Tonto.
Oh, you safe. Me wonder why you not draw guns.
Dane planned that quarrel. I knew he had no reason to shoot me, especially with the sheriff present.
Oh, that's right.
He was after Dutch.
Him chase Dutch out of cafe. Them ride that way.
Dane means to kill Dutch, Tonto. Here, Silver.
Come, Scout.
Who did the whinnying?
Oh, the sound effects people. Oh, yes.
I love it. Hey, Rachel, isn't there some Michigan connection? We all, those of us who watched always heard Tonto call the Lone Ranger Kemosabe.
Yes. So James Jewell was a director with the show, and apparently his father-in-law owned a boys' camp up at Mullet Lake in northern Michigan, and the camp was called Kemosabe. So the thinking is that's where the term came from.
And now, when the program went national on the Mutual Network, did it still stay produced out of Detroit? Did that change anything? Was it still Detroit with Detroit actors?
It was, for the most part, Detroit with Detroit actors. There was a contract agreement when it went to Mutual Network that it would stay in Detroit into the mid-1940s.
So it went off the air, and then the television show that I'm as a baby boomer, I grew up, it was like not a Saturday unless you watched The Lone Ranger, and that was Clayton Moore who played him.
Mm-hmm.
And The Lone Ranger was actually an ancestor of another popular radio drama hero, The Green Hornet.
Yes. So The Green Hornet also has a birthday this month. He was created in January of 1936, also by George Trendle. And Trendle wanted a more modern character, again, a masked crime fighter, And the Green Hornet's name is Britt Reed, and he is the Lone Ranger's grandnephew.
So cool. Lou, you have spent your life, you know, in the theater. You have taught acting and drama to legions of young people, including, full disclosure, my son, which is how I had the pleasure of having of knowing your story. Those radio programs in that golden age of radio, what do you think those programs meant to working actors at the time?
Oh, they were definitely a way of life. They meant a lot because it was the only place they could work. You know, we did not have television. Radio was the medium which everybody listened to. If I can tell you one quick little story, we would record the show at maybe like 2:30 in the afternoon or something. We would have to get out of school, take the bus. We took the bus in Detroit down to the station, which was at that point on Jefferson, in one of those big, old, wonderful houses near Van Dyke.
Hmm.
And the WXYZ studios were there. And we would go there and we would record it. And, of course, whichever of us was on the show that day, would then get on the bus with my mother and come home. And all our friends from school would meet us at the bus stop. And we'd tell them all about that episode, although they didn't call it episodes in those days, all about that day's story. And on the way home, we'd talk about it. We'd get to the house and we'd turn it on. And at 5:30, it would come on. And we'd all sit and listen to it together. So the country listened to the radio. And the actors, if they were fortunate enough to be regulars on those kinds of shows, had a very nice living. As I recall, it had been unionized. I don't know when. I know that I had to join the union, the AFRA, A-F-R-A at the time, no television.
No television.
yeah. And we had to be members of the AFRA organization in order to be on that show. So it was nationwide in that regard.
We are so glad we could have you on to share your memories as we mark this birthday 86 years ago this week, January 1933. When The Lone Ranger premiered from the Detroit studios of radio station WXYZ. And we've been talking with Lou Smella, who was a child actor on The Lone Ranger before going on to teach theater for years in Oakland County, and also to Rachel Clark of the Michigan History Center. Thank you, both of you, for making this a very, very fun look at Michigan history.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you very much.